bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, just reach out to me and send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Oh, here's a good one that just came across my desk. And of course, this is like, this horse has been beaten before. Anyway, cars make us more lonely. Does car dependence make people unsatisfied with life? Really? A recent study from Arizona State University researcher found that while having a car can boost life satisfaction, being dependent on it, on one, can actually start to hinder overall happiness. Study was based on a survey of over 2,100 U.S. adults living in urban and suburban areas, March 2nd, 2025. More in the show. Yeah, I know, the bike makes me happy. The cars, like, you know, car's the car. The specter of road violence keeps people from interacting. Yeah, here's another little thing that was found. And you can blame cars for that. So, hello. Isolation creates isolation. Not so good. All right, moving on into my rant land here. I got a few other rants. Federal Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy tells Congress he's not delaying DOT projects as he continues to delay DOT projects. What? Really? All right. Well, we got other things. Okay. On a positive side, in taco news, I'll let you take that wherever you want. This comes out of Brain, Bicycle Retail and Industry News. China-made helmets and bike trailers with aluminum frames will remain exempt from the 7.5% Section 301 tariff until at least the end of August. Hey! That's why I said taco news. Anyway, what else do I hear? Got a couple of notes here I have to go through. And one is, rest in peace, Glenn. Tailwinds forever. We went to the memorial service for Glenn Newcomb this past weekend. Very sad. Saw a lot of people who ride bikes there. Saw a lot of friends that knew Glenn there, too. But anyway, we'll move forward. Steeplechase Bike Tour is on pause for 2025. Big news, folks. The Steeplechase Bike Tour, that thing that I've been really involved with for a number of years, which helps the Windham Area Interfaith Ministries, the Project Hope, formerly the No Freeze Project, and also Project Emo, has been put on pause for the year due to some organizational challenges. We'll leave it at that. That's probably the most positive way to do it. It's not a farewell, it's a regrouping. All three organizations remain deeply committed to the Steeplechase as a cornerstone community event. I'm just reading a press release here. And symbol of compassion, wellness, and regional solidarity. We're excited to announce that planning is already underway for a bold new vision called Steeplechase Ride Fest 2026. Reimagined event will build on the legacy of the ride while expanding the full-day festival atmosphere, featuring food trucks, a family fun run, expanded athletic events, and new activities designed to bring together people of all ages and interests. So keep in touch. We're not going anywhere, but apparently we're taking a sabbatical. Is that a good word for this year? I'm very sad to hear this, but this is what was decided by the committee, and so therefore here's where we're at, just so you know. But if you're still looking for a great ride, you're still looking for a great ride up here in northeastern Connecticut, because Steeplechase is by far one of the better ones, there is always the Quiet Corner Century and Metric Century put on by the Thread City Cyclers in late July. I'll mention more about that later on in the show. So don't give up yet, because we've got another possibility out there for you. And, you know, mark it on your calendar when we get there. I'll have the calendar date in the events section at the end of the show. Mechanical Minute and Ron's tips for the week. Step-by-step guide on bike cleaning. I'd like to go over cleaning your bike, because, you know, a clean bike is a happy bike. And we want our bikes to be happy, right? So I'll go over some basics as far as cleaning your bike goes. And then I'm also going to include in this after that your legal rights and responsibilities as a cyclist and also as a driver, because it's kind of appropriate for the times we're working with right now and the local events that have occurred. So I just want to make sure that we talk about that a little bit too. Let's go back to the bike cleaning part first. For starters, step-by-step guide to cleaning your bike. You know, your bike gets dirty. Of course it gets dirty. If you're a mountain bike rider, you know about that, because it gets dirty every single time you ride the thing. But if you're a road bike rider, your bike can get dirty too. There's lots of grime that kicks up from the road, and you know, you sweat on it, and of course, you know, you might splatter a little bit from the drivetrain because of not lubing your chain correctly, like lubing it just before I go for a ride. Never do that. Did I ever mention? Never do that. Okay, you always lube it the night before. Let it dry before you go for a ride. Anyway, we'll get back to that. So what you're going to need to clean your bike, shop rags, shop towels, or old cotton t-shirts. I'm sure everybody's got a drawer full of those. So if there's any of those that you no longer can wear because they're either no longer fitting your physique, or if they are just literally falling off of your body, that's an old t-shirt works great. It really does. Now, I know you can get you get sentimental about the shirt, and so you keep it for a long time. But, you know, I'll let you guys make the decision as far as that goes. What else you need? Bottle brushes, things that will, nice stiff brushes that you can use for scrubbing around those tight little corners and things. I find when I go to our local dollar store that you can find a variety of different scrub brush type things, and that works really good because they're relatively inexpensive, and if you end up getting them too dirty or worn out, you can always toss them and get another one. But those seem to work pretty good. I'm also a really big fan of the old paintbrush. If you have like an old brush that you have determined is no longer good for painting, it's a great thing for cleaning with, because you can get those brush bristles in all sorts of places. So that works pretty good too. And that's definitely a good thing. Hey, Chris, how you doing? Thanks for coming on. Also like a soft square head brush for wheels, but you know, different brushes for different things, whatever you might have. A garden hose, but not anything that's real high pressure. Okay, be careful about that sort of thing. And of course, sponges. If you've got old sponges, that works really good too. A lot of people like to use some sort of a detergent that works good in cutting grease, like a dishwashing liquid, something like that will work also. And then Also, as far as options go, a bike stand. If you have a bike stand, it's great because it just supports the bike and makes it so you can really, you know, get in there and dig around and take your wheels on and off easily and do that. So that works really good. And one of those little chain keeper things that you put in where you take your rear wheel off, you use it to keep the chain and the tension on the rear derailleur. And those are kind of handy too. Relatively inexpensive item. I've got a couple of those I always have in my garage. And any kind of a degreaser that you might find. I like to use the environmentally friendly degreasers, like the orange style solvents, something that's citrus oriented. They seem to work really well, and they're a lot better for the environment as far as that goes. So you want to do that. If you are doing this indoors, not highly recommended. If you can do it outdoors, even better. But a lot of times I clean my bikes in the off season, so I'm doing it indoors. If you put down like a plastic tarp or an old, here's my favorite, put down an old shower curtain. Put it down on the floor so that anything that drips down, drips onto that, and then that won't be so bad. Or if you have an old bed sheet or something like that, you can do that too. You can even actually wash that afterwards if you wanted to use it over and over again. A drop cloth that you would use for painting with, that sort of thing. That works really good for putting underneath, and that will keep everything kind of neat and pretty in your house, so you don't have to worry about that. Otherwise, you could just do it outside. What I prefer to do when it's warm out is to haul my bike out by the garden hose and, you know, do it out in the yard. And that way I can really, you know, be real, real effective in my washing and cleaning. So do's and don'ts of bike cleaning. Do recycle your old dish sponges. You know, those sponges that just get so ratty after a while and then they start to smell weird. if you're thinking about throwing them out, throw them in a little box or a bucket or something in the garage or the basement, and use them over again for bike cleaning duty, because they work well. They really do work well, and you know they're going to get thrown out anyway, so you might as well just use them, because they're probably going to get dirty if you use them for bike cleaning. And you want to, you know, clean rags are like a must. I also like to tear off some really thin strips of clean rags to get into those real tight sections. And I've also found that there's various types of twine that are available that are good for getting between the cog set in the back when you have like multiple cogs in the back of your bike. And they work pretty good too. And then you just cut off a strip of it that's only maybe like a foot or two long, and get in there and clean, clean, clean. And then you can always throw it out. Once it gets really greasy, you just throw it out, so it's super easy. Anyway, don't mix your buckets and your tools and your rags. You won't want to accidentally, you know, cover your frame with drivetrain grease. So, you know, try to use clean equipment every time you clean your bike, or else you're going to end up with dirty smears on the frame, and that's not going to work real good. Don't ever use an abrasive sponge or any kind of abrasive brush on your frame. You want something that's relatively soft. And never blast your bike with a high pressure hose. Don't do that. Water will get into and degrade your bearings. Even your seal bearings are subject to abuse by a high power, like a pressure washer, pressure sprayer. So please be careful doing that too. You don't really want to do that. So that kind of covers your setup. You want to fill a couple of clean buckets with water and a generous squirt of dish soap, and lay out your sponges and rags, and then you put your bike in the work stand, and that gives you a supported area for you to suspend your bike. And what I like to do at that point is I will generally take the wheels off my bike. And so you remove your wheels, and if you have one of those little chain keeper things, those work really good to keep tension up on the chain, kind of also suspends the chain so it's easier to clean. So I would consider doing something like that. The other thing is, if you don't have something like that, but you have an old rear axle that came out of maybe an old hub or maybe even just an old hub, you can just put that in there and that will act as a chain keeper too. So there's a lot of little tricks that you learn along the way when you're working on bikes all the time. Seeing as I spent 44 years in the industry, I've learned a couple of tricks along the way. So anyway, that all works pretty good. And let's see, what else? How do you do it? So start out with, if you're going to work on the bike, I like to just kind of lather up the whole bike real good, but I would rather clean the chain first because the chain is probably the messiest part of the bike. Chain rings, those are both going to be pretty messy. So they just collect dirt over the time, and with extra lube added on, sometimes they get a little gunky. So I go for the chain first using a degreaser of some sort, and you can, if you've got a keeper on the back so that your chain isn't rubbing against the frame, but is then rubbing against either the axle on the keeper or even like a little wheel if you have a fancy keeper like I do, you can just pedal the chain around backwards and use that, and forwards actually. You can do both because you're not really propelling a wheel or anything and everything's out of the way. It's really easy reach. You can wrap around the chain with rags, or you can also, I like to use a brush on this. Another thing I forgot to mention too, old toothbrushes. Yeah, old toothbrushes. Yeah, you go through toothbrushes, they get, you know, the part where they start getting flared out and they're not really very effective anymore in your teeth. They're great for your bike. And if you don't have old toothbrushes, once again, a quick trip to the dollar store and you can pick up a variety of brushes, whether they are soft or hard doesn't really matter, although I like the hard ones better because they tend to work on chains a little bit better. It all depends on what you're using it on, but if that little toothbrush can get in between the screws and the points on the rear and front derailleurs, and it can also get into the length of the chain, I like old toothbrushes a lot, so I would consider that. Yeah, so a bottle brush or an old, it even says here in my article I'm referring to here, old toothbrushes also work well. So don't be afraid to clean the chain more than once, maybe twice, maybe three times, go through it, because you'd be surprised just how much gets jammed in between those links and all. So it takes a while to get it clean, and I go back and forth with it. So I pedal it forward, I pedal it backward, and I usually do it two or three times. And when I finish doing my chain, I will, I'll dry it, of course, with a dry rag when I do that. And then I will then run a wet rag through around it. I'll wrap it around, but that wet rag will actually have lube on it. So that starts the process of putting some lube back onto the chain. And then eventually I'll address it later once I put the whole bike back together again. So, you want to then work on your frame because now you've got the wheels off the bike. So you've got an open frame that you can work on, which is really helpful once the wheels are gone. And then one other thing I forgot to mention was the front gears, the crankset on the bike too. You want to do those at the same time you do the chain because they've got a lot of grit and grime on them. And even if you have to use something with a little bit of a sharp edge on it to, you know, clean off the chain ring as you spin it around, you'd be surprised how much crud you can get on those things. So you can use that, and then I go back to the brush and I use the brush on that too. And if I really get into it, and this doesn't happen very often, I will actually take the crank off the bike and the right side drive side off the bike, and I'll remove the chain rings and clean the chain rings individually. But we're talking about a very meticulous cleaning at that point. And that's usually just kind of a once a year thing, you know, your annual big overhaulish type time when you're working on your bike. But you can do the quick stuff with just brushes. We'll get in there and they'll do pretty much what you need to do. Brushes and rags will do a lot. So you want to use a bigger, like softer brush for tires and rims. they work pretty good. You got a big bucket of soapy water there, and you're just going at it. And then when you get done with the soapy water, then you're going to either spray it off with a hose or use a clean bucket of water that you're going to use as your rinse bucket. But make sure that you be careful if you have disc brakes and you want to use the soft sides of your sponges, and with just soap and water on the rotors. You don't want to touch the rotors with anything of any kind of oil type atmosphere. So you want to keep those oily, dirty rags or things that you use for doing the chains. You want to stay away from the rotors on those things. And also your fingers. You got oil. You have skin oil. You don't want that on there either, or else you're going to have brakes that are singing to you when you apply them. So you probably want to be a little more careful if you're working with disc brakes. They tend to be a little more finicky as far as that goes. Meanwhile, you're back up on, if you have rim brakes, you've got a caliper, you want to get in and around that. Once again, brushes work really, really good. And I use all different types of brushes. So you kind of, what you'll do after a while is you'll get a collection of the things that work best for cleaning your bike. And that'll be in a separate bucket that you keep for when it's time to clean the bike. So after you get all of that done, it says here to reattach the wheels and spin the cranks, make sure the drivetrain runs smoothly. Before I would do that, I would also clean the rear cassette. I would either do it in two different ways. I would either remove the cassette and put it into some sort of a solvent so I can really swish around and clean it real good. That's the real effective way to do it. But if I'm doing a quick clean because, you know, I've been riding my bike for a couple of months and it really needs a bath, I usually just do it by taking like a very thin rag or, like I said, some twine. If you can find a big, I can't even think of what they call the type of twine I use, but I have a roll of it and I just, you know, go in there with that and clean out between the cogs and the back. Works pretty good. That and good old toothbrushes and other brushes too. And then you wipe everything dry, and then at this point you want to lube your chain. It's time, because you put your rear wheel back on, you take your chain keeper out, you put your rear wheel back on. And now you got the chain, which is nice and clean and dry and probably crying for some lubrication at this point. Mine's not too dry because I left a little bit of lube on it when I did my final cleaning on the chain. But now you want to lube your chain and just, you know, put a good coat of lube on it and then wipe it down one good revolution, put another coat of lube on, and then let it sit. Don't mess with it until you're getting ready to ride the next time. At that point, I always take a clean rag and I put it on my chain and I run it around a couple of times, and that removes any excess of lubricant that may be on the outside of the chain and keeps it from getting dirty as fast. So those are little tricks that I've learned along the way. You definitely want to play around with it. Your bike will look real pretty if it's clean. We had a little secret we did at the bike shop. And when we had the frames all stripped down like that and had them nice and right down to the paint where you could see things again, I used to buy it by the case, furniture polish. And I would spray down the frame all good, and then we would wipe that all off, and that would be like the final cleaning on the frame, and it left a little wax finish on the bike. It just looked great. So that's cleaning your bike. That's what I know of cleaning my bike. That's what I've done in the past. Seems to work pretty good. I pulled some of these recommendations from Bicycling Magazine, because they had a little thing about how to clean your bike, and they're pretty much right on to the same method that I use. But when your bike's clean, it just looks nice. You show up to the group rides, everybody goes, "Ooh, look at your bike, looks pretty good." Yeah, well, I cleaned it finally, you know. Sometimes I wait too long. Anyway, let's move on cycling tips. I just wanted to go over legal rights and responsibilities of cyclists and drivers, seeing that we just recently lost a good friend on a bike to a driver of a motorized vehicle. It is not entirely certain what happened there because I don't have major details at this time. I'm still probably going to pursue a police report just because of my own curiosity, and I'm very uncomfortable with this. It doesn't make me feel real good. I will note to you, and this is a big note, and I was noticing it yesterday. Yesterday, the town of Mansfield has this little bike ride called the Tour de Mansfield. And I was up there and kind of observing people's bicycles when they were checking in, because I can't ride yet. I'm still in that medical condition of not being able to ride outdoors. So I just went up to kind of, as Fran says, schmooze with my friends. And I noticed, I was actually questioning people who had their bikes there. Do you have radar on the back of your bike? And I'll ask you that too, if you're listening to the show. Do you have radar on your bike? If you are riding on the road and you do not possess radar on the back of your bike, I'm going to tell you, make it a Father's Day gift. Father's Day is coming up. Make it a birthday gift. Make it a strong recommendation to those who love you, because it's the best thing I put on my bike in years. It's great. It's a great indicator. It talks to my computer, and or if you use a cell phone on your bike as your guidance, as your GPS guidance, it will talk to that too. It just lets you know what's coming up behind you, and it makes a world of difference in safety. So I'm a big, big believer of them. I talk about them all the time in the show. There's a variety of different radar lights out there now. Garmin started the whole thing, and then there's other companies that have come out with them. They're just one of the most brilliant ideas and inventions I put on my bike in years. I feel so much more confident when I ride on the roads now, and I have also added a small bike mirror to the end of my handlebars. There's a company called Cat Eye, which makes a bike mirror that is 45 millimeters in diameter. So it's very small. It's called the BM45, Bike Mirror 45. And it's stable. It stays put. It works really well. It's not obtrusive in any way. You don't look entirely geeky with it. But you know what? I'd rather look geeky than get hit. But that's just my opinion. You can form your own opinion. Doesn't matter. You can also take it off real easily if it's, race day and you feel like you don't want to have a mirror on your bike because everyone's going to laugh at you. Put away that. That's ridiculous. Don't worry about that part. Anyway, we'll move on here. Rights to the road. Cyclists have a legal right to share the road with motor vehicles, occupying full lane when necessary. This is important. This means cyclists are entitled to the same space and respect as any other vehicle. Remember, your bicycle is a vehicle. The other vehicles that are out there, the motorized ones, probably do not have that same opinion, but the law does. So be sure of that. Speaking of law, follow your traffic laws. Just like drivers of automobiles, cyclists need to obey the laws. You need to stop at stoplights. You need to stop at stop signs. You need to signal properly. Simple. You use your fingers. You point to the left. You point to the right. That's where you're going. I even point straight ahead when I'm going through an intersection, and I look directly into the eyes of the driver of the car that is on the other side of the road. I make sure I communicate well with them. I usually get friendly waves for this, by the way. So you want to make sure that you are contributing to being a responsible cyclist when you're out there. Visibility and safety, that's kind of a no-brainer. Yeah, the brighter you are, the easier it is for you to be seen. And so that is a huge thing. The other thing about being seen, and this is something I recommend when I'm teaching people how to ride on the roads, especially the back roads, which is my favorite. I'm a roads with names guy, not numbers. I will find myself drifting more out into the road as I've ridden lately. I just, especially since Radar. Radar has made just such a huge difference in that. And so I can see the car coming almost before they can see me, but they can really see me a lot better if I'm in the middle of the road than they can if I'm on the very edge of the road. What happens is when drivers come up behind bicycles and they're right on that very edge of the road, they oftentimes don't see them until the last minute. And because of that, there's a danger factor involved. So make yourself seen. And then the minute you see a car coming up from behind by being alerted by your radar or looking in your little mirror too in conjunction, then you just slowly go over to the side. Don't do it quickly. Don't make herky jerky moves or anything like that. You want to make it look like you're responsible and you know what you're doing. And you very gradually veer over as far as you can safely be on the road. I don't like to go right on the very edge. It tends to create a problem. If I see a vehicle coming at me on the opposite direction and I have someone coming up behind, I do not go over until the vehicle that's coming towards me goes by. And then I go over and then I wave the car by me. That way they don't try to make an ill-fated attempt at passing me and then going head-on into the vehicle coming at them. This is kind of 101 for safety on a bicycle, but I know a lot of you guys, if you're guys and gals, if you're listening to my show, you know what I'm talking about. You're all very, very aware of this. I just like to refresh it for, we do have a lot of newcomers coming into the sport. We have a lot of folks getting back on their bikes that haven't been on bikes in years because now they have an e-bike and it's like, wow, I can ride my bike again. This is great. So, you know, there's a lot of people that are just getting back into it again. But you really have to ride your bike responsibly. I tell people, as far as riding in traffic goes, I tell people very, very simply, when you're riding in traffic, you're not riding in traffic. You're driving in traffic. Ride your bike like you're driving it, okay? If you think like a motorized vehicle, you'll get more respect from the motorized vehicles and you'll be able to communicate better with them and you will be safer. Like trying to make that left-hand turn from the shoulder, what a very, very bad idea. Trying to make that left-hand turn from the center line, great idea. Everybody sees you, you're in the right place, you're not throwing any concern out to a motorized vehicle about what's he going to do? What's he going to do? Oh my God, is he going to dash in front of me? Don't confuse the other party. And the other party, you and the other party will get along a lot better together. So driver's rights and responsibilities. So they also have specific rights and responsibilities to uphold when sharing the road with cyclists. The duty of the cars, they have a legal duty to exercise reasonable care while operating their vehicles. Unfortunately, that's getting worse, but I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm just getting old and cranky, because I am old and cranky. I know that part, but I'm saying it because this is the observation that I got. I was having this conversation with someone yesterday and I said, you know, COVID, remember the pandemic? Boy, those first couple of months of the pandemic, I never felt safer on my bicycle. It was great. Everyone was home. People were working from home. People were schooling from home. There weren't a lot of cars on the road. And the ones that were on the road were there for a purpose. And they were so much kinder to the people who were riding bikes. Unbelievable. Yeah, Chris, I agree. Better than a mirror. I think Radar is the best. I guess I know what you have. I agree. So anyway, the duty of the driver, respect a cyclist's space. You know, I mean, we're real soft, squishy things. We're not big, massive metal objects going down the road. We're human beings. And we could be someone's mother, someone's father, someone's doctor, someone's lawyer, someone's judge, someone's police officer. I'm just mentioning that, you know, someone's aunt, someone's uncle, someone's son, someone's daughter. Think about this. You know, the people who are riding bicycles aren't out there because they are just no one and it doesn't matter You got to be careful. So respect the cyclist space. Make sure you give them enough space, especially if you're passing them. And also take your time. If you're coming up behind a bicycle and you see an opportunity to pass them, but there's another car coming the other way, wait. Just wait. 10 minutes, 10 seconds. No, it won't be 10 minutes. It'll only be 10 to maybe 30 seconds, actually. The actual average from a previous show that I've done is it takes, the average time is about 33 seconds to get around a cyclist as you're driving your car down the road. The average time in the McDonald's drive-thru is 4 minutes and 33 seconds. Not saying anything, just making a point. So respect the cyclist space. It promotes a mutual respect and fosters a safer road environment for all users. And accountability for accidents. In the unfortunate case of a collision, you may be held liable for damages if found negligent. You need to pull over. Do not hit and run. Hit and run will put you in jail because someone will see it. Someone will know. Or you will get caught. I have a friend who was hit and run many, many, many years ago. It took them a year, but they eventually found the person who did it. You know how they found the person who did it? Paint chips that were embedded into the person's body that was hit. He survived, not in a great way, but he, you know, still walks and talks, just blew the not such a good, you know, he slurs his words a little bit and all. He's definitely, he got pretty hit. But they found the guy and he ended up in jail. He ended up not spending enough time in jail, but he did end up spending a year. And, you know, that's a year's worth of time to think about what you did is probably helpful in some way. Maybe it's a good therapy of sorts, let's say. So you want to just be aware on both ends. And I really, really, really push this thing hard because it goes both ways. All right. I know I come down on people who drive cars a lot on this show, but I'm going to tell you something else. I also come down on people who ride bicycles a lot on this show because I see people do things that are not smart. And when you do that, you do two things. A, you put yourself in danger. B, you put the driver of the motorized vehicle in danger. And C, you give us all a really, really bad name. So stop it. Don't do that. So back to drivers. Distracted driving. I once said that the cell phone was the best invention that was ever made for a cyclist. I only mean that in the hands of a cyclist. I do not mean that in the hands of a driver of an automobile or a motorized vehicle. Texting while driving, talking on the phone while driving without being hands-free. No. It is the number one cause of accidents now, this whole distracted driving thing. It's horrible. They relate it to drinking, what, 2 or 3 beers? What, and then getting behind the wheel and driving, it's not good. Do not do it. Put the phone down. Guess what? If it's that important, pull your car, put your signal on, pull your car over, and then, you know, deal with your emergency that you must take a look at your latest, you know, TikTok photo or whatever. I don't know what people do on their phones. Too much. We all do too much. Unsafe passing. Yeah, just be, think clearly about what you're doing. By the way, and we had this incident a few years ago, a friend of mine and I were coming down a road and the speed limit was 25 miles an hour. We were approaching a stop sign and I saw a car coming at us, as I have described before. So I got out in the middle of the road and made the car behind us slow down. And after that car went by us, the person was laying on their horn. It's 25 mile an hour road. We were 20 feet from the stop sign. What do you want me to do? Pull over so you can speed around me? That's not smart. So I just held it until the stop sign. I made my turn because I was going left and they were going right. And, you know, just be patient. be patient. It's not that hard. Again, 10 seconds out of your day, and you'll spend almost 5 minutes in a McDonald's drive-thru. Don't even get me started. Door accidents. Yeah, if you're in the city and you're in the driver's side of the vehicle and you just parallel parked, please, 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 please look in your mirror and turn around and look back before you open your door, because there's a real good chance there might be a bicycle there. Hence, if I'm in the city and I'm driving through a situation like that, guess where I am? I'm on the center line. I'm away from the swing of a car door. So as a cyclist, I just put myself further out into the road. If someone's going, getting impatient behind me, they're just going to have to deal with it. I'm going to be going fairly fast anyway in that situation, so it's not really that much of a holdup. But dooring is a real problem, and they're to the point where it actually has a name called dooring, getting doored. So, you know, you want to definitely be careful of that. And, you know, if you're driving your car down the road and you see a bike lane, stay out of it. That's not for you. It's not yours. It's not yours. I know it's just paint. I know there's plenty of room to go there. And why don't I go there? I never see a bike in there. I don't want to hear any of that. Stay out of that lane as a practice, right? So anyway, the incidence of people being hit and killed by motor vehicles and cars is increasing, and every year it gets worse. And I really do believe that cell phone is probably the most obvious reason why that is happening. We have a lot of distracted driving. We built our cars so that they will distract you on the dashboards. There's all sorts of things going on. There's buttons to push and things to touch, and it's not a good thing. It's really not. Cars will only be safe when humans stop driving them. That's my statement. So anyway, back to the cell phone. As far as a cyclist goes, great tool, man. It's just a great tool. It's your own personal weapon is what it is. If you are having an altercation with a car, you immediately flip that thing over to video mode and record what's going on. And you don't even have to tell the person you're having the altercation with that you are doing that, although I do. I always tell them, I'm recording this. I just want you to know this is being broadcast out on my page. And, you know, and or I tell them I got 911 online and I'm waiting for the state police to come. And that usually really slows them down. But that phone is so important. Make sure if you are using your phone and you have been involved in an altercation that you go over and get a good look of the license plate of the vehicle and the make and model of the vehicle. I always will also verbally put it out there. This is a 19, well, I don't know what year it is, but this is a silver Honda Civic or whatever. This is a silver Chevy Silverado, massive truck thing, whatever. I just make sure that I identify the vehicle also. And the driver is male. The driver is female. I just, you know, just like you're doing a report, use your cell phone. It's a very, very useful tool. All right, we're going to have to move on here because I just can't. I can't dive into this any deeper today. I have some other things I want to talk about, and we're going to run out of time if I do this. Let's go back to the car dependency associated with lower life satisfaction. A recent study from Arizona State University found that while having a car can boost life satisfaction, being dependent on one can start to hinder overall happiness. The study was based on a survey of 2,100 U.S. adults living in urban and suburban areas. Analysis showed that when people had to use cars for more than half of their activities outside the home, satisfaction went down. Got that? So there was a PhD student, of which has a name that I'm not even going to attempt to go for, but they were at ASU, and they were the study author. And the quote here is, "We see single-family homes everywhere." So that's something that encourages car dependence. So if we can rethink those policies, that would be helpful. And the other thing is parking requirements. And as you know, it's related to zoning in general, but rethinking and revisiting those policies can be a good step. So she also said that while satisfaction did decline after the tipping point, it was still higher than not having a car. We don't want to get rid of cars, but to at least encourage multi-mobility and encourage people to use other modes of transportation. The study was published in the Journal of Travel Behavior and Society, Arizona State University. Wow, driving a car can make you sad. Who would have guessed? And yet there's so many more studies out there. I found a few of them. Evidence from U.S. National Survey on whether, you know, you're happy or sad when you drive a car. Guess what, folks? The more time you spend in your car, it affects your mental health. Not only your physical health, because you're sitting in a car all the time, but also your mental health, too. What's the Pedal and Ron Challenge? You guys listen to this show long enough. You know this one, right? Park the car once. One day a week, use your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. I'll say that at the end of the show too. But anyway, 92% of occupied housing units have access to at least one vehicle, and 87% of Americans use their cars daily. And that was from a 2017 U.S. Census Bureau. Also a 2022 census. In addition, while 69% of commuters drive to work, only 3% use public transit to access their jobs. Ride your bike. You have your own personal machine. You can park it right by the front door. You don't even have to walk a quarter mile to get in to work. You can just bring it right up to where you are. Bicycle just makes more sense. The pure, perfect, independent machine. That's it. That's why we're Bicycle Talk. That's why I talk about bicycles all the time. So it also has negative implications for well-being, sustainability, and social equity. The study shows, this is a different study joining scholars' effort to understand how travel behaviors affect. The conclusion that planning and transportation policies aim to promote well-being and people's quality of life, one policy implication of the study that stems from the negative association between high levels of car dependence and life satisfaction involves promoting multimodability. One of the measures of an objective car dependence, sharing of car trips, out-of-home trips, captures to some extent that multimodality. The results indicate that using a car for more than 50% of the time in a typical week is not good. So anyway, that's it. We've got to stop driving our cars so much. We'll be a lot happier. And then there's just so much more that I could talk about here, but we're going to have to be careful of our time here today. I'm every time I put one of these shows together, I go, gee, am I going to have enough to talk about? It's never much of a problem. But anyway, there's studies out there about how cars harm society, and machines taking over the cities, leaving humans in the dust. There isn't enough physical space for every single household to store a fleet of personal vehicles in front of their home, nor is there space for everyone to drive at the same time. So it needs to get fixed. This is a simple thing. It really is. There's so much out there. So much. And then there's... and then we have our U.S. DOT Secretary, Sean Duffy. And he talks about bike lanes. And this guy is... you know, it's amazing to me how extremely well-educated people can be... mindless? I don't know. Closed-minded? What do you want to call it? I don't know. this guy just does not get it. His own department has information and about, you know, transportation, because it is transportation, by the way. That's not just cars and trucks, by the way, just in case you didn't pay any attention here. There's transportation is transportation. Transportation, you could be walking and that's transportation. You know, got to look at it from a different way. So he said the word bikes like it was an expletive before repeating a string of corrosive myths about bike lanes that are all too common among people who only get around by car. He said, I'm not opposed to bikes, but in New York, they want to expand bike lanes and then they get more congestion. First one wrong. While what are the roads for and how do we use our roads? If we put bikes on the roadways, then we get congestion. It's a really bad experience for a lot of people. Okay, those are the oops, you got that one wrong. This is for your highly educated folks. I do think the problem when we're making massive investments in bike lanes at the expense is at the expense of vehicles, he added. Bicycles, vehicle, dude. I do think you see more congestion when you add bike lanes and take away vehicle lanes. That's a problem. Well, guess what? He's wrong again on all counts. The studies have shown, even his studies in the Department of Transportation have shown that congestion gets reduced when you put more bikes out and bike lanes out on the roads. It reduces, does not increase congestion. Why? Because there's less people in cars and there's more people on bikes. And they're all going the same way, and they're all getting there at about the same time. He states that, he goes on to say that bike lanes are really dangerous for bikers in urban areas, and implied that Europe, which has many cities more livable through pedestrianization and the massive expansion of bike lanes, is not worth emulating, despite its lower fatality rates. Who is this guy? Who is this guy? Who appointed this guy? All right, Taco. Forgot about that. We don't have the same mentality as Europeans do. And so I don't think we should necessarily buy into the European model, he added, seconds after praising European high-speed rail in an earlier answer. You know, think about what comes out of your mouth before it comes out of your mouth. The good news is that Duffy said he'll be willing to look at data to see if bike lanes save lives and reduce congestion. And if they do, he even said, we should do more bike lanes. Well, dude, read your material. Where were you before this? What department were you in before this? What do you know about transportation? Most of the appointees had no clue about what they're doing, but that was by design. So anyway, fortunately for the secretary, Streets Blog, one of my favorite places to go for advocacy information, has been providing data on the benefits of bike lanes and the stubborn myths that tend to follow them since 2006, including decades of data on this very topic that his administration recently scrubbed from federal websites. It's real easy to say that bike lanes don't work when you take that information away from your very own website. You are the Department of Transportation. Do bike lanes save lives? First thing first. What is, so the high quality separated bike lanes that physically divide motorists from vulnerable road users they may strike is the answer, the resounding answer of yes, absolutely. Even the paint-only bike lanes are shown to save lives. In one federal highway study, the showing a 49% reduction in total crashes on urban four-lane undivided collectors and local roads after striping one in. 49% reduction. Boom. On two-lane undivided urban collectors, these roads showed a whopping 30% crash reduction. These are total crash reductions, by the way, not just involving cyclists, also involving cars. No brainers. What do we do? What do we do to get these points across? My feeling is, if you want to make a statement in your town and or city, and you're trying to get your point across, invite the locals out for a short bike ride through some of the most dangerous places you have in that town. It's an eye opener. I gotta stop on this. I'm gonna have to save this for next week because I got some other stuff I really need to attend to here, and part of it being and we will get back to it. I promise. Criterium de Dauphiné. Anybody watching? Yeah, I know the Giro's over, so there's more bike racing. If you're not familiar with the Criterium de Dauphiné, the Dauphiné is the lead up to the Tour de France. It's oftentimes a tune-up race for the Tour de France. The first episode, we'll call it the first stage of the Dauphiné, was on Sunday, June 8th, and just down to the wire, sprinting towards the finish, four of the most famous of all riders away, and did not get swallowed up by the pack at the very end, but it was literally seconds between them. But wild stuff. Tadej Pogačar, Jonas Vingegaard, Remco Evenepoel, and Matthew Vanderpoel pulling it off. Wow, good stuff, great stuff. This is so much fun. I love it. Bike racing is truly one of my passions. I love watching it. I loved to do it when I did it. It was great. I'm going to go on to events because I'm just going to run out of time. And then we will talk more about the Dauphiné next week, because it really is kind of an indicator about who's who and who's going to be who in the Tour de France. So Sunday, September 21st, though, the 9th annual Southbridge Credit Union Tour Apakum, a bike ride for land conservation. Something you might want to take a look at. There's all sorts of fun stuff afterwards. There's a brewer's after party at a winery in Brimfield, and craft beer and food trucks and live music and games. Oh yeah, and there's a bike ride. Yeah, I know. Also, the Quiet Corner Bike Tour presented by the Thread City Cyclers, my club, my local here, Sunday, July 27th, 2025 in Chaplin, Connecticut. And you can find out more of that by going to threadcitycyclers.com. And if you look on their website, you can find out more about it. It's also up on Bike Reg too, just so you know. Eurobike is Wednesday, June 25th, coming through to the 29th. And we'll get to see all sorts of neat, cool, great stuff. Fun, fun, fun. All right, let's do this. We're going to finish this off. We've got finishing points. Please be extra careful out there. Cars and trucks are deadly. Yeah, they are. Anyway, rest in peace, Glenn. We are thinking about you. Tailwinds forever. It's the Criterium de Dauphiné. It's just more excitement, more great bike racing. It's an 8-day stage race, but a lot of fun to watch. Good stuff. This clip from our friends at the League of American Bicycles. Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone. When more people ride bikes, the League is making biking easier and safer option for more people, because when more people bike, people are happier and healthier. Our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. So simple. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, and the price of gas, and lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Show up to a town meeting. Make a statement. And hey, take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Park that car or truck for a day. Ride your bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or driving your car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Storch. She's got a bad back today. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can comment down here below. If you're listening to it on an audio file, please just drop me an email if you need to talk. BicycleTalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Run. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. You just might save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Get on your bike,